if she comes back. But if there's no way of moving back, what when your face falls apart? Have you got enough time?
From the land of the sky and to high strangers around the globe, this is Joshua P. Warren's Speaking of Strange, hosted by Vance Pollock.
And the world is becoming more and more insane every day. Welcome to the program that gives you breaking news and insight into the paranormal and downright weird, where the unusual becomes usual. And we don't just discuss it, we go into the field to investigate. Joined by investigator Shelley Wright and producer Sam the Animal Steele. How are you, Shelley?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Doing well. And Sam sounds like he's just doing great as well.
Just peachy, Vance.
It's been a couple weeks. I've missed you guys.
It's been like a month.
Out of the pocket. Yeah. It's been pretty much a month. But I'm back in the saddle for Joshua P. Warren, Speaking of Strange, and a lot of weirdness from around the globe to share with listeners tonight.
Regale us with some stories from around the globe?
I will regale you with stories from around the globe tonight, and we might do some gifting. Everybody brought something for everybody else. I thought that was neat. Sam starts pulling out thrift store finds for me and Shelley, and Shelley's got a little bag of goodies over there. I've got a air sickness bag full of good stuff to share with you.
It was so weird that Shelley she brought out of her purse like a dead rat. It was the strangest thing, and she's like, "Here." We were like, "What?"
What does this mean?
What's a dead rat?
Keeping it strange here on Speaking of Strange. I was in Iceland. The place is quite well known for a sort of...
iciness?
And like a heathen atmosphere. The connection to the pagan traditions,
saunas.
The Scandinavian. Hot water. They do have saunas, but I think Finland is the place that's made saunas like their national, part of the national culture. But my niece and nephew were over, and we went into a sauna. We did the sauna thing in Iceland, and I referred to it as a sweat lodge, and we did that on their first day there. So for the next 10 days that they were over to visit, when we would have outrageous experiences, we would just look at each other and say, we're still in the sweat lodge. This isn't happening. We're just imagining this. We slipped into some sort of mental state where it's like the ayahuasca experience, the DMT experience. Cover story of the new Fate magazine, number 731. It's out finally. This one was delayed a couple months. Here it is, Shelley. Great looking cover art. Yeah. Check that out.
Thank you.
Ayahuasca. Are you familiar with ayahuasca, Sam?
I am. A couple years ago, I did an interview with Joe Rogan, and we spent a good bit of time in that interview talking about ayahuasca, ibogaine, or iboga, DMT, mushrooms, Terrence McKenna.
Right.
Things of that nature.
I think a lot of people who aren't familiar with ayahuasca, I would compare it, and I've asked a couple of authors and experts on the subject, if it's something that you could compare to, you know, to the layman with like peyote, like a tribal ritual sort of experience.
Not a recreational drug.
No, not a recreational thing, not something that we're encouraging people to run out and do on the weekends.
Well, I don't think you could.
But no.
It's not like I went to this awesome show the other night and took some ayahuasca, and it was banging.
Now, as a matter of fact, they say that there's a lot of vomiting and possibly...
nightmares, visions of hellish, you know, the demons escaping, or like you're visualizing, you're seeing them enter you, like...
When I think ayahuasca, peyote, tribal trips, or whatever, there's a scene in Young Guns. Do you remember in Young Guns when all the cowboys took peyote and they were having...
It's been a hot minute.
Yeah, Young Guns. That's timely. That's just like Hollywood. Well, it always happens at some point in the conversation we reference
Lou Diamond movies. Phillips.
this week, Young Guns for homework. Go back and watch Young Guns and their peyote experience.
What
Did
happened?
You see the size of that butterfly? That's one of my favorite
I think
quotes
peyote is actually probably more of a possible recreational. I mean, like, you know, it's still very deep and introspective, but ayahuasca, I think, to be the deepest of all of those. And there's a whole industry now that's popping up with fake shaman or, like, people who say they're shaman and, you know, there's ayahuasca tourism.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely. And when it's done, as it is in the indigenous cultures, the tribal culture, there's someone who's experienced with this who sits with you, mm-hmm. you know, and kind of
a spirit guide
helps you through this. Absolutely.
Well, I have a friend who's, well, he was going to do it last weekend, and then it got maybe pushed to this weekend. He's been doing a total cleanse and not smoking, not drinking to get ready to do ayahuasca. He's going to do this basically with himself and his girlfriend there just in case anything happens. He's from Colombia, and this is a very deep spiritual thing for him, and I'm done to find out what happens.
Yeah, could be interesting. That's a interesting point. They say that the fasting before is so you don't vomit or
you're gonna vomit.
otherwise purge everything in your system. So the less you've got in your gullet, the less likely you are to mess yourself. Anyway, that side effect, that very very sometimes explosive physical side effect is enough to keep people from abusing it in a recreational manner. But there are people that are on vision quests who are so struck by this idea of enlightenment, or, you know, it's like switching your brain into another gear.
Have you ever done acid?
No, only cough syrup.
No.
So, like, if you've ever taken acid, it's like, you know, they say that we only use what percent of our brains, you know, like a fraction of the total, you know, computing power of our brains. And like if you take acid, it's sort of like you've added more RAM or something. Like you could look at the same object that you see on a daily basis, but now you're seeing it differently, you know, like a different color. Like, oh, I've never noticed that hue before, or that tree, like I've never really looked at it. And that can sound kind of dumb just off the head, like, oh, I stared at a tree. But, like, you're seeing more. It's like, you know, going from 480p to 1040p, you know, HD. You can watch Young Guns on VHS, or you can watch Young Guns on Blu-ray 4K, and it's going to look a lot more bright and vivid. It's the same movie, but, you know, it's like you're seeing things in a different way. And so if you can harness that, you know, a lot of people do take acid or shrooms or stuff for recreational purposes. But even in that manner, you're still getting a side effect, which is viewing the world through a different lens.
Causing synapses in the brain to fire. And I mean, you can talk to a lot of people who are pretty sharp folks who claim that through meditation and practice, you can reach these levels of thought. You can unlock potential in the human mind.
We had that guy on from Black Mountain that used to work with Moog, and he had, remember the light and the sound thing at his house in Black Mountain, where you would go to his house and like he had this these huge subs and these lights, and you would lay on this table and these subsonic bass frequencies.
Was that at the UR Light Center? They have something at the Light Center, which is over
Josh
here.
Josh and Lauren did this a couple years ago, and we had on the phone the guy, and he used to work with Robert Moog at the factory and in the lean years when it was basically just him and Bob, and now he's doing his own thing. And that was really interesting. It was basically inducing a hallucinogenic-like state through light and subsonic sound.
Fascinating stuff. And there's all sorts of good stuff in the Speaking of Strange archives. A number of those can be found as podcasts at speakingofstrange.com. What are we going to dip into this week? A little bit of everything, folks. I mean, we're going to be running the gamut of oddness and peculiar occurrences tonight. Synchronicity, of course, we're going to slide some of that in there. We may even, teasing a little bit, we may even get Mr. Mobius on the line for a field report. It's been a long time since we've heard the voice of Mobius. Every week we hear from Mobius in a way, because he provides much of that Dark 30 content, and not all Dark 30 content. Some of the content, UFOs and technology and things like this that we will sprinkle through the first couple hours. Mobius is our content man and so much more, and it's long overdue that we check in with Mobius. So maybe we'll do that second hour and the Dark 30. I think we're going to be ringing the bell tonight, if you know what I mean. I take a few weeks off, and my home state of Florida embarrasses me yet again. No, who am I kidding? Most of those people are transplants anyway. I claim no kinship to these people doing bizarre and strange things in Florida. But if I were to have to defend them, I would say that the fact that the sidewalks are hot enough to fry an egg would be excuse enough to fry your brains into doing some very bizarre things.
Hasn't been exactly cool around these parts lately.
No. I wanted to speak briefly about the weather. Thunderstorms in July around Asheville always remind me of the story of Helen Clevenger, the murder at the Battery Park Hotel.
Old Helen Clevenger.
Old Helen. We may talk a little bit about Helen Clevenger near the anniversary of her murder. I don't know the exact date, but I do believe it was late July 1936 that Helen Clevenger was murdered at the Battery Park Hotel during one of these thunderstorms. And so that the pistol shot that killed her was actually thought to have been a snap of lightning, because there was a lot of thunder rumbling at the time.
Very, very frightening me.
Mm. So Helen Clevenger, and there is ongoing research into the entities at the Battery Park Hotel. Maybe I can touch on that subject a little bit. You are listening to Speaking of Strange. Joshua P. Warren speaking of strange here on 570 WWNC, the Talk of the Mountains. It's good to be back. Let us entertain you for the next 3 hours. Hang tight.
Here we go.
Say hussy the other night, and all my friends were there. And in the midst of the spirit lights, they told us to beware. We sat there for nearly an hour, and nothing would appear. And then I heard the medium say, he said, "Son, your ghost is here."
Speak Speaking of strange, we're going to be taking you down some dark roads tonight. Sam's contribution to the gifting here in the studio, Patricia C. McKissick's The Dark 30. And they're not the sort of naughty tales we do on The Dark 30 here, but I like...
The title is what? The Dark 30?
Southern Tales of the Supernatural. There you go.
Mm-hmm.
I'm liking this. Looks really good. It's
aimed at, like, you know, middle school, probably like 12, 13-year-old kids, from what I can tell.
Right, first Scholastic printing, October 1993. So that's a classic. The Dark 30, Southern Tales of the Supernatural.
Yeah, I read a couple of them. They're pretty cool.
I like juvenile literature. I mean, paranormal literature for kids. It's almost better than the sort of slop that passes for paranormal literature geared towards so-called adults. I think that the interesting thing about juvenile literature of the paranormal is that it still assumes a certain wide-eyed wonder that people tend to lose once they become adult and mature. So reading the younger
literature. Well, it's also a little more G-rated, probably PG.
Yeah. I remember some parents that were very strict religious evangelical sorts who their kids would not they would not have allowed their kids to have had this book because it had supernatural on the cover. No, you're not reading any of this wicked stuff. It kind of reminds me of, and here's another great man lost, George Romero.
Oh, I know.
Man.
I mean, he did smoke like 5 packs a day, and he was like in his 80s, right?
Well, I think he was 77, but we were talking just a few weeks back about Night of the Living Dead and Creepshow. Creepshow, definitely one of those movies from his resume that was huge to me as a horror movie fan. I think that was where it there was no turning back when I saw Stephen King's Creepshow, directed of course by George Romero. And looking back, obviously it's a Romero film, but I had no idea who George Romero was when I watched Creepshow for the first time.
That documentary that we were talking about a couple weeks ago about how they made Night of the Living Dead, you know, and utilized the townsfolk, you know, and the police officers, and the, you know, everybody came together in, was it Pittsburgh area?
Yeah. Yeah,
and like the TV creep show host, and like all those people, like, and you know, made it on such a low budget, and he really never got any return on that because of a clerical filing error in the copyright, and so it basically was instantly in the public domain, and it's been released, you know, by every independent publishing thing. He never saw any of that money, you know.
Which, in the long run, even though it didn't add up to any financial return on his part, it did help to seed the movie widely. I mean, the distribution, when this movie, when it was realized that this low-budget zombie classic was in the public domain, it got a lot more
midnight show
play and widespread. People were able to pick it up and run with it. So in a sense, that may have added to... The cult greatness of Night of the Living Dead. Anyway, farewell, George Romero, one of the greatest horror movie directors of all time. Nobody's going to top that. I should also mention, I think in that same episode, we were talking about horror hosts. We talked about Dr. Paul Bear. Probably mentioned Elvira, Mistress of the Dark. I can say that a good friend of mine, Heather Miranda, is due in town very, very soon. She's a tattoo artist. She's not only a tattoo artist, but she's one of the celebrity tattoo artists on the show Epic Inc. I don't know if you ever saw Epic Inc. on A&E, but they've got a tattoo parlor called Area 51.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
In Portland, Oregon, I believe, and they do a lot of sort of pop culture tattoos and weird, wonky stuff. And Heather Miranda is a friend of mine. We grew up in Central Florida together.
Bringing her guns with her?
she probably is. Yeah, she's going to be giving tats and trying to make a little money. I think she and her family tried to resuscitate an RV and drive around the country. And by following Heather on Facebook, I think it's fair for me to say that she's had a hell of a time with it. This RV ends up broke down about every two states. And so her adventures on the road, I hope she makes it to Asheville, because it's been a rather harrowing experience with this secondhand RV and everything in the world going out. But she says she
might
wants
be the one to do my Creature from the Black Lagoon tattoo.
You got a plan? She is the one, Sam.
I have had a plan for
maybe
a while.
Maybe we could do it here in the studio
on the air.
Let's do it.
That would be the most boring episode. You just hear
you would just hear the buzzing and Sam screaming in the background, but we just leave the mics on and talk.
I don't scream. I sweat a lot, and I get a little peaked.
Heather's the one, man. Yeah, that would be so awesome. But Heather is due in town any day. I think initially our plan was to land here in Asheville tomorrow. That's Sunday the 23rd. She may be here as early as tomorrow, folks. If you go by the speakingofstrange.com website, you'll find my email address is down there in my bio blurb. It's obscurist@yahoo.com.
It's
there
not
you go.
Vance in the pants anymore?
No, I don't use that one. That's for other things. But obscurist@yahoo.com. It's on the speakingofstrange.com page. If you think the opportunity to get a tattoo by Heather from Epic Ink is just too good to pass up, I happen to know that she's going to have a few days here in Asheville, and she might have an open appointment book. So email me.
I got first dibs.
Yeah, Sam's got first dibs on that. But if there's some other good paying customers out there that want Epic Ink, Heather Miranda is going to be here in Asheville. Hope that RV makes it down here. I think she's driving
a
rental car.
And then, what is it? What is it, Vance? Is she flying?
Didn't I say slide into town? I didn't mean literally that she was going to be on a plane. No, she's going to be rolling into town. And one means or another, I think she was in a rental for a couple of days and the RV was back in the shop. But anyway, sounds like a fun odyssey that Heather is having out there on the road. And I invited her to come in and do a taping of Speaking of Strange with us. So who knows? All these things may come to pass. Heather, good luck and get here soon. In the bag of goodies, I got some of these. I'm just gonna pass these stones around. I got stones. Got one for Sam, got one for Shelly here.
Is this one of your kidney stones?
Yeah, I passed these while I was in Iceland. This is actually I was reading the pronunciation for this stone. It's either chalcedony, which doesn't sound right to me, or chalcedony. Chalcedony or chalcedony. In the Icelandic, they have a nickname for this stone, this rather translucent stone called draugastein or ghost stone. And I haven't been able to discover in the folklore a whole lot about it, other than that there was a story about a priest in the 1600s who would carry one of these stones around him as protection from evil spirits. But the local nickname for it in Iceland is ghost stone. And where we lived in the north of the country, you would very often find them that had been rolled in the sea and polished by the surf. So they were laying on along the beach like pieces of sea glass, and I would collect those. When I was back at my in-laws, I found stuff that had been in storage there for the past 12 years, and against my wife's wishes, I threw this formula container. It's a formula container that's some powdered nutrients for baby Sylvan, my 12-year-old, when he was a baby. I had just packed this thing full of rocks that I'd picked up around, and I dug through there, and I said, oh, wow, here's some ghost stones. So I just grabbed a few of those out and threw them in my pocket and figured I would pass them around. Interesting stuff. Attractive, and the Vikings used them as beads and for decorative purposes. So maybe
for some
these.
Reason, I want to put it in my mouth.
Well, if you got evil spirits, if you got a toothache, maybe it'll drive the evil spirits of that toothache out of there.
I did knock the tooth out the other day.
We'll be right back. It's Speaking of Strange. Screaming Jay bringing you back in to another segment of Speaking of Strange. Joshua P. Warren, Speaking of Strange. I am your host, Vance Pollock, in the studio with investigator Shelley Wright and producer Sam the Animal Steel. And we're doing a little gift swap. Here's something that I was going to pass on to Shelley before the break. I handed out samples of chalcedony, which... I told you some of the Icelandic or Scandinavian lore surrounding chalcedony is to call it, colloquially, ghost stone. And it may have something to do with the appearance of the stone, but I found one account from early folklore of a priest who carried a piece of this stone in his pocket to ward off evil spirits. So, fascinating stuff. Shelley, I brought you... This is not human remains. This is not something that I dug out of a pile of cremains. This is a sheep bone, a sheep knuckle, as a matter of fact. In Icelandic, in the Scandinavian folklore, this is called a vala, V-A-L-A.
Uh-huh.
As a matter of fact, one of the most mysterious pieces of Scandinavian literature is called the Völuspá, or... roughly translates as the prophecy of the Vala, because witches in pre-Christian Iceland would carry in their bags, among other things, beads and things, these sheep knuckle bones, which they would cast to foretell the future. And at some point in my travels around Iceland, I found this sheep knuckle bone. So I now present that to you, as a sort of token of pre-Christian Scandinavian fortune telling.
This is very cool because, you know, I do have a bone reading set, but none of my bones are anywhere near as cool as this is.
Well, that's a sheep knuckle or a vala.
Different than the moose knuckle.
Yeah, quite different.
Quite different. Thank you.
I will have to bring you a translation of the Völuspá, the prophecy of the Vala, or the seeress who used these organic, you know, fortune telling. But the Völuspá is the one that predicts the twilight of the gods, the death of the gods, and then the rebirth of the Norse deities after Ragnarok. So, yeah, that's all pretty deep stuff. If you're into the Norse mythology and things like that, that symbolically, for me to find a sheep knuckle just laying in the Icelandic landscape was very important. It was important enough that I would pick it up and put it in my pocket. But we all know that I'm prone to picking things up and putting them in my pocket. It's kind of like telling Buddy the Elf not to chew the gum that stuck under the rail
probably
in the subway.
Explains your extensive rap sheet for shoplifting.
Yeah. I was pretty good at that, actually. No, the matter of the shiny little disc from the pile of human remains that I picked up along the parkway, that narrative is to be continued. But as I told Shelley, when we did Fate Magazine Radio the other night, I got Shelley in as my sounding board because I do Fate Radio Magazine on Sunday nights, and I got Shelley on, and I told this story. When I came back from Iceland, and I'm driving from Charlotte to Asheville, and I get off Interstate 26 out here by the airport, and I'm going Airport Road down to Sweeten Creek and Hendersonville Road, trying to get the back way into Fairview, I had to follow a car all the way from the exit down to Sweeten Creek that had a LaFleur County, Mississippi plate on it. Yeah, okay, maybe I'm one of these guys that's just prone to cloud gazing, seeing things in the ink blots that aren't really there, but I read synchronicity like getting stuck behind a car with a LaFleur County, Mississippi plate significant.
What's the significance of LaFleur County?
LaFleur County is where Greenwood, Mississippi is. It's where Money, Mississippi is, and I had tied it into some of these ghostly tales, particularly Emily, the little girl ghost. You'll remember that Shelley had met some 20 years ago, and we kind of came to a resolution about Emily. Her grandparents, who built the house out here in North Asheville, the Streeters, they were from Tallahatchie, Mississippi, down there within a stone's throw of LaFleur County.
Wow.
When we had Stevie Tombstone in here a while back, he talked about his song Greenwood and his attempt to put a stone at the grave of blues legend Robert Johnson. The Tallahatchie Bridge is in LaFleur County. That's where Billy Joe McAllister
It goes even deeper.
Off. Yeah.
When I was in elementary school, I attended Scott LaFleur's School of Gymnastics.
Wow.
So there you go.
Wow.
It gets deeper.
Jeez. You can draw lines all day here on Speaking of Strange. Yeah, sometimes it's a bit of a stretch, but I followed this car all the way home. But then when we get back online, when I plug all the gear back in and the Wi-Fi kicks back in at the house, practically the first link that my wife finds when she goes onto her Facebook is from the Biltmore House, and it's an essay just posted hours before, a blog about Buck Springs Lodge up there on the parkway, which
the ruins,
and I found the remains. So I told Shelley, these ghosts of Mississippi, whoever's remains I disturbed is still trying to get a message through to me. So I'm going to have to keep looking closer. And the tag in the remains, the silver tag, had a Mississippi funeral home on it. That's what Vance gets for picking up things that he has no business.
I got to show Vance the video that I showed you. Remember about that weird lady outside my apartment?
Yeah.
And she was weird enough. Early in the morning, I started videotaping her, and then as I'm videotaping it, I'm watching it through the screen. I'm watching it with my eyes. Then I go back to the screen, and I see this object that's in the screen that's not visible to my eye. So I'm like, what is this? And it's not like a laser pointer. It's not a bug. It's this glowing orb that's right around her, and then like it keeps moving. And then, but it's not like a laser pen. And I'd look with my eyes and see nothing there. And back to the viewfinder, and I could actually see it, and I got it on tape, and it's really odd.
Hmm. You don't think it was a lens flare from a vapor light or anything like that?
No, it doesn't. It moves around like it's not stationary. It's not just floating. It's like it'll zip off and then like come right back around her and kind of like float around and then. But it has, and she was like in this zombified state. She wasn't like drunk, I don't think. It was like she was like a zombie. It was really scary. Like it was 5:15 in the morning, and she's just wandering through the parking lot, and then she stops outside my apartment. She just bends over at the waist and stays that way for like 4 or 5 minutes. So I'm like, I'm gonna videotape this. You know? Like,
wow.
And so I'll show it to you in the break.
Yeah. And what do you think, Shelly?
It's pretty interesting.
Weird stuff, and the light effect made it even stranger, huh?
It did.
It could be legit something.
Oh, I forgot to mention when I was talking about my buddy, my buddy Heather, the tattoo artist. Mm-hmm. She gave Elvira, Mistress of the Dark, her tattoo. In the movie Elvira, Mistress of the Dark, Elvira had a little tattoo, but it was just makeup for the movie. So years later, she decided she was going to get the tattoo that she had in the movie, and my friend Heather gave Elvira her first and only tattoo.
For 5 bonus points, what beer did Elvira used to endorse?
Ooh. Miller? More High Life? No, Miller Light?
I believe that was it, yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, cleavage like that'll sell anything, though.
Well, Bob Uecker endorsed Miller Lite as well, so that shoots that theory down.
Here's a seg. We've got my friend Heather coming to town who gave Elvira her first and only tattoo. And Björk, the most famous Icelander. I've just returned
Did you
from
say
Iceland.
Björk? Right?
Björk.
Not Bjork?
It's not Bjork, because that O with the umlauts, the two dots over it, sounds more like a U.
So
it's
we've just
Björk.
Been saying it wrong.
Yeah.
Everybody.
Yeah, we've been saying it wrong. Bjork. It's Björk. Hmm. Björk has one tattoo that she got when she was 16 years old. I've met the guy over in Reykjavik that gave Björk her first and only tattoo, and it is a symbol. It's kind of like a mystical compass to guide one through rough patches, or to guide them safely. And I know it's kind of tacky because it's just like airport souvenir, but lo and behold, here's this keychain with this sigil on it, guidance through rough weather. And this is the same emblem that Björk has tattooed on a keychain. It's a magical sigil from Iceland. Ooh. There you go, Shelley.
Thank you.
And I got one for Sam of what they call the Eishjalmr, or Helm of Awe.
That's
it's
my color,
for
too.
Protection, strength, and power. So there you guys
have
some magical sigils from Iceland to carry with you and protect you and inspire you.
It's my lime green, yellow, my favorite color.
I kind of like that.
Yeah.
We'll be right back on Speaking of Strange. winding down the first hour of Speaking of Strange this Saturday night in the studio with yours personally, yours truly, Vance Pollock, Shelley Wright, and Sam the Animal Steel, and we're eating candy and swapping gifts and having a good
old
time.
It's like Christmas.
It is.
Yeah, it is. I wasn't kidding when I said I had a barf bag off the airplane, and I thought it was kind of funny that it doesn't say anywhere on there. This is how classy Icelanders are. It doesn't say.
That's not what loft slag means. Or
no,
house.
No.
It sounds very dirty.
It does sound dirty.
The Icelandic barf bags have a vocabulary lesson on them, I guess, because to make it sound right, you have to say it like you're throwing up. I think that would be German in a lot of cases. Yeah. Wasn't there a comedian that had a bit about that?
Norm MacDonald.
To pronounce German, you have to say it like you're throwing up. Loftslag is the Icelandic word for climate, and it goes on to describe the Icelandic climate, how it's a lot milder than you might imagine. At the bottom of this description on the back of the brown bag that's a little plastic-coated or whatever inside so nothing will leak out, it says, please feel free to keep this bag and add it to your collection of aeronautical memorabilia. And I thought, if anybody's got a collection of aeronautical memorabilia, it might be Sam Steele. Well, so, Sam, you go. You just scored
now.
A barf bag.
Now, if I'm correct, Greenland and Iceland, when they were named, wasn't it that Iceland was named Iceland to try to, like, fool people that it was, like, really icy and to stay away, and Greenland was to lure them there, even though it was, like, way more covered in permafrost or something of that nature?
Partially true. Iceland had been discovered and named some years before Greenland. And it is partially icy, especially in the winter. It's snow-covered, and there are glaciers, and any time of the year, like when we were over here, there's snow on the higher peaks and everything like that. So, yes, there is generally ice to be found in Iceland. So it's not a misnomer.
But Greenland would be an icier place.
Greenland, they say, even in the Icelandic sagas, that was sort of a tourist, a name chosen to attract tourists rather than tourists, new settlers, because Eric the Red, that Viking crazy guy, he had been outlawed for killing some neighbors in Iceland, and he had to flee to Greenland. So basically the first permanent settler in Greenland was Eric the Red, who just happened to be Leif Erikson's father, Leif Erikson, the discoverer of America. And so Eric the Red named Greenland, and sent word back to the folks in Iceland, this place is so much better than Iceland, so much greener than Iceland, and pasture land and all this great stuff up here. And somewhat rather tricked some of his old neighbors into helping him settle Greenland. So, yeah, partially true, Sam.
You ever heard that, like, conspiracy theory, the Finland conspiracy? About Japanese fishing in Finland. Yeah, it's not a real country.
Don't know where that's going.
It's an actual conspiracy. There's a whole thread on it that it's called the Finland conspiracy.
That there is no Finland. Huh?
That it's not that there's no Finland. That it's not a real country. I'll explain to you during the break. We'll delve into this conspiracy one day.
The Finland conspiracy, yeah.
Starring Gene Hackman.
Finland and Iceland are kind of on the outskirts of Scandinavia. My wife argues to me that Iceland is not Scandinavian. Iceland is not part of Scandinavia. Scandinavia is only Sweden, Denmark, and Norway.
Well, they are the three
and
together.
And Finland are out is on the outskirts in Iceland, even though the Icelandic language is closer to the Old Norse language that was spoken in Scandinavia during the Viking era, Iceland is not part of Scandinavia proper. And she and I will have these long, boring arguments about why Iceland is or is not a part of Scandinavia. I say that Iceland is a part of Scandinavia.
Well, you have a microphone in front of you, so you're winning. I'm the one now.
I'm going on record as saying to me, Iceland is Scandinavia. And I'm in the meantime, during the breaks, I'm looking up photographs of sheep knuckles and and Norse sigils.
Be careful. We're on a company computer here.
That's right. Coming up the next hour, let's get Mr. Mobius on the line. Why not? See what he can add to the conversation about Finland conspiracies, etc. This is Joshua P. Warren speaking of strange. We'll be right back.